Welcome to the Bad Apples. This is episode 016. Today we're going to be talking about Apple prices, notebooks of all colors and sizes, the Skype phone from Netgear, and a whole lot of security tips, a couple of cool Mac apps thrown in there to the mix. Today in the Astiopod studio, I have Gort live and in color.
Yes, indeed. I'm Gort.
And I'm Klaatu. This is the Bad Apples. You know, Gort, one of the things that I keep hearing from some of my non-Mac friends, I think I have one or two of those, is that Apples are overpriced. They're always telling me how expensive the Macs are. And at one point, I just kind of broke down and I said, okay, let's go out, you take me to your store of choice, and let's pretend like I'm going to go buy a PC notebook. And let's just look at the prices.
So this is the age-old question of, are Apples overpriced compared to PC?
Yeah.
And my standard answer when people start talking about that is, actually, there's a couple of answers. One of them is, well, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
I've had a PowerBook G4 on which I continue to operate for a good number of years now. And tell me, how many laptops have you gone through in the same period of time? And why would that be?
Right.
And so you went to the store, you looked at the laptops from Brand X, and compared it to the prices on the Apple.
Yeah, I mean, I figured for the people I was talking to, you know, they would be looking at like something in the MacBook line. And so I was trying to find something that would be comparable to the MacBook that would be substantially cheaper. And it's not out there, you know? I mean, like you say, how many laptops must these people go through? Because they're really, you pick one up and you feel like it's just going to kind of snap apart in your hands. You know, it's like the weirdest, cheapest feeling plastic I've ever felt. And aside from like design, you know, the prettiness of it, that notwithstanding, it's just the feature set that you're not really getting what you'd get in a MacBook, or you're getting the exact same thing, but in the cases that you are getting like either the exact same thing or you're making some trade-offs here and there, it's pretty much the same price. You know, I went out kind of expecting, let's find something for really cheap, like $500-$600. I mean, that would be, you would think that would be cheaper than a MacBook, you know, that price range. It would be
a no contest.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, once you get up into the $900 range, $800 range even, then it becomes really a question of, well, am I going to pay a little bit extra for Mac OS or plus a webcam? I still don't know if a PC laptop that comes with a camera in it, you know, embedded in it, like the MacBooks and MacBook Pros do.
Yeah, the only one you'd have to watch out for is the Sony Vaio.
I was looking at those, and I didn't see one. Do they have a new one out lately?
I think it's either their mid-range or their high-end. But at that point,
yeah,
it's either, well, now we're comparing oranges to oranges, because now you've got a feature set in the Sony Vaio. How do you say that thing? Vaio?
I think it's Vaio.
But that's the high-end Sony with all the features that are really pretty much comparable to a Mac.
Yeah.
Because now we got $2,500.
Right.
I mean, I'm not exactly certain about the prices, but they are definitely within the price range of each other. And you're down to, okay, which OS would serve me best?
Yeah, and I went out with like all the specs of basically the cheapest MacBook, which is $1,100. I went out and compared those exact feature sets to prices. And, you know, I mean, you're never getting the webcam. Sometimes you'll get like a CD, or like a DVD burner, which I think the lowest end MacBook doesn't have a DVD burner. It has a CD burner only, which is kind of silly, but then you're also, in the PCs, you're not getting even like a FireWire port or an iLink port or whatever they call it in the PC world. So, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, you're getting some things and then you're not getting other things. And it's just, a lot of the notebooks out there that were really cheaper weren't even the same chip. I mean, it's not even the Intel Core Duo 2. It's like an older Intel chip, like a Pentium 4 or something. Yeah, I'm not impressed. I'm not buying into the whole Macs are overpriced thing. Although, to be fair, you know, the market I think that the Macs do not have are the, like, those cheap towers that you'll see out in the stores. You know, it's just like a cheap HP or a HP Compaq tower that you can open up and you could just put in whatever kind of graphics card and whatever PCI expansion cards you want to put in there and kind of just mod it and make it into something totally you know, unique.
Those are throwaway computers.
Exactly, yeah.
And to those I respond with, do you want to spend your time using it, or do you want to spend your time on hold while you're waiting for tech support?
Right, right.
Now,
yeah.
When you buy a Mac, you get potentially three computers in one. You've got a robust Apple product.
Right.
You've got a reliable OS, the most reliable OS on the market, I would venture to say myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And one coming down the pipe in October.
A good progression of the continual cleverness that we see Apple and their true innovation that we see Apple expanding,
yeah.
expanding on that we've seen through the years. Okay, so we've got a reliable OS. You've got the capability to run the most fragile Windows, if you want.
Right.
All supported on a foundational Unix OS.
Right.
That's three
right.
operating systems, and two of the three are rock solid. If you really need Windows, it's there for people that claim that, oh, I have to have all my MS software. Well, yeah, sure, okay. Show me your CD originals. Shareware? Okay, fine. Boot it up. Let me see your shareware with the no try before you buy screen.
Right.
I've seen plenty of people say, I can't live without this software. Oh, okay. Will it run on a Mac to have a Mac version? Does it do the same things on a Mac that it does your PC? Sometimes, you know, whenever they ported it, they may have not ported a full feature set. Microsoft has been known to do that, most notably with some of their most high-end, most critical applications, Word and Excel.
Wow.
They don't have the same feature sets anymore between the two platforms. But anyway, unless you got some serious apps that you need, you use them in such a way that it makes your house payment for you.
Right.
Then you can switch without fear. In fact, Microsoft is forcing you to switch anyway. It's called Vista.
Right, exactly.
And please, don't get me started on Vista.
We won't. We've heard it. We agree with it.
I think right about now we wanted to talk about some security tips.
I think that would be great.
One of the things that many new users run into is when they set up their computer, they're prompted for their user account or to set up a user account.
Sure.
Now, if you're an old guy like me and you're accustomed to the old way of the earlier operating systems, there was no such thing as a user account. It was your computer.
Yeah.
You don't want anybody to touch it. You simply kept it locked in a drawer. That's not quite the case anymore these days. The computers are out and they're around, and they really do need to be secured.
Well, plus, yeah, and we're on a worldwide network, typically. I mean, more often than not, you're online.
And there's a lot more things we do on a computer that have to do with our identity and paying the bills.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff we keep on our computers now that we didn't used to keep on computers.
Yeah.
And some of it is very personal, and some of it's very damaging. If somebody were to learn your Social Security number, your bank account number, the passwords to how you get into your online banking, or any other number of things.
Oh, yeah.
So setting up a user account on your new machine or when you install a new operating system is pretty important. So I'm going to share with our listeners now how to set up your basic accounts.
Great.
So right out of the box, it'll prompt you for setting up a user account. So when you first install the OS, keep in mind there's an administrator, and that can be you, and there's a user. That can be you too, but they should be two separate items. So both items also require a password, and you will maximize your security when there is an administrator you and a user you. So create these accounts. The way you create these accounts is that when you're installing the OS, by default, you become the administrator. Then it will ask you to set up another account. That's going to be your user account. And the way you do this is to create the second user account that you will use every day with a unique name and a unique password. This user, by default, has no administrator privileges, and you must invoke the name and the password of the administrator account in order to install any new software or to make major global changes to your system, like alter your network connections.
Or change passwords.
Change password and things of that nature.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the first user, I mean, that's really kind of transparent almost. I mean, because when you first open up, if it's a new computer, when you first open it up, it's asking you, okay, put in your name, put in your short name, which it doesn't say, but is actually going to be the name of your little house, your little user folder, and enter a password and all that stuff.
Right.
But then the second one, basically you just have to go into your system preferences and go into the accounts tab and set up a second user, and don't give them administrator privileges. Make them invoke your super user, your administrator name and password.
You've expanded that quite well.
I thought I did. well, you know what, Gort? I mean, I know that you're big on firewalls. What kind of I've seen a lot of people's computers. I've helped them set things up. 9 times out of 10, I don't think most people even realize that Mac OS X has a built-in firewall function. What about this?
Oh yeah, sure. Actually, it's not so much a matter of being big on firewalls. It's just being big on security and protecting yourself from any number of possible attacks or compromises, or any of your data being compromised on your own machine while you're connected to a network. So firewall is a way to do that, to keep you to keep others out of what you want to call your own stuff. In order to set that up, and here's a quick and easy way to do it, simply go to System Preferences, and on the System Preferences window, you will find the Internet and Network area. Click on the folder labeled Sharing, and that comes up, and it'll have your computer name on it. And right in the center of that window, there's Firewall On, Firewall Off. Click the pieces of, or click the items there that will allow personal file sharing, window sharing, web sharing, whatever you like. There's a whole list of things there. And you click the ones that you want to allow, and then apply.
And I don't think a lot of people even use most of those sharing things, you know? Like Xgrid especially. I don't think anyone uses that unless you're setting up a render farm for your video. Mm. But people leave some of those things checked on sometimes.
Well, I think the ones that most home users might use would be probably the network time.
Yeah.
Because it's an easy way to get your time off Apple's network. Probably the Bonjour features.
That's for your local iChat network, right?
And any of the in-house, in your house physically.
Right.
That you want to be controlled through the rendezvous stuff. And then your personal file sharing, if you want to do that.
Right.
Allow certain folders to be shared and be visible. Much the same way as you do for the .Mac features, where you have a share folder.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you want to go to advanced. On this firewall window, you have an advanced button. You click on the advanced button, and you will now come up with stealth mode, block UDP, enable firewall logging. These things I have checked. I don't want UDP communications accessing my resources.
Okay, so let me get this straight really quick. So in this window, you check the things on that you want to block. And in the first window, we are checking them off if we want to disallow them.
Correct.
Okay.
I guess that's kind of counterintuitive, isn't it?
It just seems like it, but as long as we understand it, it's good enough. So we're blocking things by checking them on. Got you.
And probably the most important one to check on the sharing screen in the advanced area is enable stealth mode. And simply reading the screen, it says, ensures that any uninvited traffic receives no response.
Very nice. So you don't exist to them, basically.
Exactly.
That's great. Yeah, that's a very important one to have checked on. I think that should, that's a great tip.
And now, the enable firewall logging, this is good news and bad news. The good news is it logs everything that is trying to access your information. That's good, so you can go see if and when you open a log, and you can look in there and see if there are any things you don't recognize or you're curious about.
Right.
And then you can run them down or check with an expert and ask, okay, what does this really mean? The bad thing is that this log keeps getting very large.
Oh, I see.
So you sort of need to run the cleanup to clean out these logs every now and then.
You know, I think the Mac, if your Mac is on, like, at 3 in the morning, literally, I think it's 3:15, it cleans it out. I'm pretty sure. I think it's what's called a cron job. Yeah, not everyone has their Mac on at 3:15 in the morning.
The other way to do it, and these are some of the things that happen invisibly, when you shut your machine off.
Oh, okay.
There are certain cleanup items that that go on, and there's a limit to this log. I'd have to go read harder about it. But these are some of the cleanup items that happen when your machine is actually powered down and powered up that help clean out some of these housekeeping items and logs.
Gotcha.
It takes care of itself to a point, but it still bears watching. If you have these things logging, then kind of make a note of that and check it every now and then.
Sure.
When you open a log, it's easy enough to zero it out. Simply hit the clear button and poof, it goes away.
Yeah, and that's just normal administrator tasks, really. Like, if you look at a company with computers, they do that kind of thing. They check the /var and the /temp folders, and they're cleaning out those kinds of things.
Right. Real life story, if you got time for it.
Absolutely.
Running my lab network some number of years ago in a rather naive environment. I was a naive administrator.
Right.
And my domain was attacked and being used by a spammer as an open relay.
Oh, wow.
Got my domain completely blacklisted on just about every mail server on the network.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I had to go through some superhuman gyrations to get myself whitelisted again.
Okay, and what would have prevented that?
Well, a closer watch on those log files to see who was taking control and using my open relay for purposes that were, you know, unintended by me, certainly,
right,
and illegal by them. Simply watching that and then shutting it down, and what did tip me off was looking at the logs and seeing how large they were getting, because it was logging all of the intrusions.
Right.
The log was getting very large very quickly, and that was concerning me. And so I read them, and sure enough, you know, here are these inputs.
Inputs from China and Nigeria. And
very bad.
Yeah. Wow. Well, open up your terminal for a minute, Gort, because I'm going to step through some firewall jobs that we can do in the terminal. The BSD program for a firewall is IPFW. Now, that's different from other Unix systems like Linux or I guess probably System 5, whatever, if that even exists anymore. But IPFW is the BSD program on setting up a firewall. And to list your current firewall settings, you can just type in IPFW space list, L-I-S-T. And that gives you a whole screen full of ports that are being affected in one way or another by your firewall. And the first thing you'll notice if you do that is that certain services are still available regardless of what we've done on the GUI side of things. Most of them have been shut off. On mine, for instance, I had shut off, I don't use the Bonjour, I don't use the internal iChat feature for anything, so I went ahead and turned it off. But when I did the IPFW, I realized that ports 427 and 5353 are both open. And that kind of surprised me because I thought, well, gee, I just told it not to share, you know, not to open up any Bonjour ports. But apparently there are still a couple open here. So you can close those if you're not using those. And the way to close something is that you take note of the number by the listing of the port. It's usually like 20,321 or something like that. And so you just type in IPFW space DEL, as in delete, space whatever that number is. So it would be like IPFW space DEL space 20321 or something like that, whatever the number is on your terminal. Another port that sometimes is left open is port 137, which is talking to Windows machines. And I don't have any Windows machines on my local network, never had to talk to another Windows machine over a network, other than the World Wide Web network. So I go ahead and shut that one down as well. So that's IPFW space DEL space whatever the number was by, you know, the port 137. And to turn that back on, like if you realize, oh, you know, I shut down my Bonjour networks and suddenly I have a need for using my Bonjour. Maybe I want to iChat someone, you know, in the same network. You can just type in IPFW space add, ADD, space whatever rule you're trying to allow. Better idea, if you don't want to do that, is before you go and delete something, jot down what you're deleting, because that's the exact same thing you want to type in when you go and add it back in.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing to have a pencil and a pad of paper next to your computer while you're doing this.
Yeah, you know, and that's what I do, but I always forget that in a Mac OS X terminal, you can just select the text that you see that you like, press Apple C, and then Apple V it back into like a text edit document and save it somewhere in your system, and you'll have access to it all the time. Mac OS X terminals are very friendly.
You just said that, and the word that came to mind was duh.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, and you don't think of it because, you know, you might be used to a real shell, you know, and just text on screen where you don't even use a mouse, you know, you're just typing in commands. You're right. Still in a Mac. You're just looking at a terminal. You can totally use, you can even drag and drop in the terminal. So
here we are. I've just completed all those commands that you were running through, and so there we are with the allow IP from any to any via LO star.
Right.
Deny IP from, it's really a local, slant to any in the deny IP from any to another local, and that's the 127.0.0.0.
Yeah, which is your machine.
Right. So it's my machine, and then from the 224.0.0.0 in any other local IP.
The one that I do leave open, and I haven't really played around with it, I don't know. Well, I guess I would have to leave it open. It's port 631, which is the CUPS port. Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
My favorite port of all, I think. CUPS, I continue to be amazed by it every day.
What functionality built in, you know?
I know. I guess that's firewalls. Any more security tips back there, or is that pretty much it?
Well, right next to security is backup, but we'll have to address that in another segment, because that's pretty big.
Well, I think we're going to have to do that in a whole episode, because that's a huge thing, and I've been playing around with a lot of different options. We're going to have to talk about that for sure. But first, right now, let's review a cool Mac app.
Anything special for your birthday?
Just a decent cup of coffee.
You know, I've got a lot of recordings in my vast music collection that were originally released on vinyl. But of course, with the magic of digital remastering and digital recording, they all sound very crisp, very clean, very clear.
Sometimes even clearer than they first came out on vinyl.
Exactly. And so sometimes, just for kicks, I kind of wonder what they would what they would sound like if I had actually heard them on vinyl.
Oh, I can tell you what they look like. In fact, I can send you some digitized photos of those originals, because I still have some in my cabinet.
Well, not all of us have a vast collection of vinyl like you do. But it was just by pure chance. I wasn't actually going out looking for this, but by chance I came across a little app called Retro Player. And it's this small, little, simple application that basically will just play your MP3 files or your OGG files or your AIF files, whatever, through a vinyl emulator. So it distorts it and it puts noise over it. And you can even you can control how much, for instance, how many times it'll skip or how distorted the record is. I guess maybe old records got slightly warped or whatever, or how much how much dust you have on it.
Yeah, there was always, you know, the big debate back then was, do you set them on their sides or do they stack them flat?
Ah, okay.
And to this day, that debate lives on.
Right, yeah. Well, most of the DJs, and that's the only time I've really encountered vinyl, the DJs I know, they seem to set them on their side. So I don't know if that means anything or not. But
probably meant that that's
what
the carpenter did.
Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't support playlists. So if you, you know, on CDs, obviously every song is its own track. So it's kind of a problem. You know, you'd have to sit there and add every track. That's kind of a problem. That's a limitation. I mean, it's a free little application. What do you want? What I did, like, in when I was really having fun with it, I would open up all my songs in QuickTime Player and copy and paste them all into a master QuickTime document and save that out as a reference file and drag that reference file onto the vinyl player. And that would just look to, you know, the actual songs. And so it would play through a whole, quote, side A, and then I would drag side B on there to give myself the feel of actually flipping the record.
How quaint.
Yes, isn't it?
It's, you know, this would just drive a purist sound engineer nuts.
It's the worst kind of reverse engineering, you know, ever. It's just like, how can we make this sound that they've spent, what, the last 50 years trying to perfect into, like, the crispest You Are There sound? How can we make that sound like it was, you know, like 80 years ago?
Bose engineers are pulling their hair out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But it's a fun little application. It's cool. It's free. I will definitely include the link in the show notes because it's a long link. It's studio-kura.com/download/retroplayer/index_e.html, and it's all in Japanese except the name Retro Player. So when you see something familiar and it says Retro Player, click on that and it will probably download for you.
Oh, it sounds like fun.
Yeah, it is fun. You know, speaking of fun, Gort, there's another fun little hack that I've got. It's completely pointless, almost as pointless as the vinyl player, but it's it's just the geekiest thing, and since we're all using, you know, a Unix terminal now in our Mac, we might as well take advantage of it and really do the extreme.
You know, all day long, we sit in cubes, and we punch these keys, and we have to produce something.
Right.
It seems like when you go home, there ought to be something fun to do with your computer instead of just doing email and an extension of more spreadsheets or Word documents, writing letters or doing online banking. There's got to be some entertainment.
Absolutely, and I think that's actually a really good point. I think a lot of people, and I've kind of been surveying a lot of the people that I know, and just kind of getting a feel as secretively and not obviously as possible. I've been asking them kind of what do they use their computers for. And, you know, I mean, if you ask enough people this, it starts to get pretty, it sounds to get a little bit boring after a while. It's like, well, I email, I go online, and sometimes I'll dump my pictures onto it from my digital camera because the card gets full. And that's kind of like it, you know, that's all. And you're like, wow, it's kind of, it's mundane after a while. So this hack not only conquers that, but it also conquers any kind of fear that some people might have still about the terminal. So if you open up the terminal, and I know you like this command, you've been doing this probably for years, Telnet.
Oh, I'm familiar with that one.
Telnet's a good one. I mean, granted, it's not, you know, I think that they've kind of deemed it so insecure now that it's not really to be used for any kind of, you know, real file, you know, important file transfer or whatever. But, you know, it still has its purpose. So you type in Telnet, and it prompts you, you know, now
it gives you the Telnet prompt.
Yeah, and it's, so what do you want to do? Well, you want to open, and then you type in towel, T-O-W-E-L, dot blinkin' lights, that's B-L-I-N-K-E-N-L-I-G-H, T-S dot N-L.
Okay, so I've got Telnet open.
Yeah.
Okay, Telnet open. And then space, towel.
Dot.
Dot blinkenlights.nl. Return.
Correct. And
there it goes.
Yeah, it's a little bit slow, so you have to wait for it to load.
I see. Original work. Okay, has extra scenes, extra color support. My, my, what is opening here? 20th century. It's a text file. You know, I recognize these words. A long time ago in a galaxy far away.
Yes, you are watching Star Wars in the terminal.
Holy smokes!
As rendered in ASCII text, or Unicode, whatever.
There it is, scrolling by. We're doing the pursued by the Empire's sinister agents, Princess Leia races home aboard her starship, custodian of the stolen plans that can save her people and restore freedom to the galaxy.
Yes.
There's the spaceship. Oh, we have... I'm watching a text rendition of this. This is with X's and O's and slants.
Yes.
And there's R2-D2. This is remarkable, folks. You've got to do this.
Yeah, it has to be done. You can't ignore the terminal for this hack.
Commander, tear the ship apart until I have the plans.
That's pretty good. Did you get James Earl Jones to call in for that, or was that you? Well, I don't think it's a complete work. They're still working on it. I can only imagine how much work that must be. But, yeah, so I'm going to leave everyone with Star Wars still playing. And I think you and me, Gort, will be back next week. What do you say? Let's go ahead and do that episode on backup.
Right.
All right. This has been Bad Apples, episode 016, the security episode. If you need to email us, you can do so at gort.klaatu@gmail.com. That is gort.klaatu, klaatu@gmail.com. Also, if you haven't been yet, please do go to our website. It is thebadapples.5gbfree.com or thebadapples.info, where you'll find this week's free desktop art to mod your Mac and make it look cooler. You will find past episodes and probably some other cool stuff. The music for this episode and all episodes was provided by the legendary New York City band Fat Chance Lester. Until next week, this has been Bad Apples. Okay, that's that.
And cut.
More out of life.